The White House says President Bush gets between 15 and 20,000 pieces of mail a day. Many Americans think nothing of dashing off a letter or email to the White House. It seems normal. The president talks to the public talks back. But people didn't write to their presidents in large numbers until Franklin Roosevelt was in office. When he gave his fireside chats over the new medium of radio, he called his listeners my friends. Millions of friends, and some enemies, spoke back.
Dear Mr. Roosevelt, I shall probably spend many sleepless nights because of my temerity in writing to the president. But this letter is, quite frankly, a fan letter. My dad and I sat at our radio last night listening to our president.
After listening as we listened to your quiet voice, I would gladly give my life for my country. And if it wasn't for you, there would be lots of boys like me who would think of themselves instead of their country.
Mr. Roosevelt,
you probably won't ever read
this. I don't see why you don't stop this war and bring our boys home. To think how many poor boys are getting killed or crippled just for your mistakes. I don't see how you can sleep if you have a conscience. May Guzin, New York.
Dramatic readings from letters sent to Roosevelt during World War II. These letters, and hundreds of others, are collected in a new book called The People and the President, America's Conversation with FDR. The authors, Cornelia and Lawrence Levine, say reading the letters is like eavesdropping on conversations from some of the country's darkest days. And it's hard, they say, to read the letters about the war without thinking about today's war on terrorism. They say the letters are full of the same issues, even some of the same rhetoric. And it's too bad you can't see these letters, say the Levines. Some are meticulously typed on thick stationery. Others hastily scrawled on butcher paper or the backs of business cards.
They were people who really struggled to express themselves. You can see the handwriting sometimes, how carefully they would draw a letter because they're not used to writing. And others who make many mistakes in spelling. Actually, the spelling is marvelously creative and inventive. It didn't seem to stop most of them.
What's very clear, I agree, what's very clear is that they felt that Roosevelt needed them as well as they needing Roosevelt. Roosevelt empowered these people, and he was a genius at doing this.
But Roosevelt used these letters in a political sense also. He felt that he had a direct line to what the people were feeling, and he could say to the press and to the Congress, don't tell me what your constituents feel because I know better. I have direct word from them.
During the past week, many people in all parts of the nation have told me what they wanted me to say tonight.
Here's Franklin Roosevelt speaking in a December 1940 fireside chat. You'll be hearing a lot of clips from the years before America entered the war, because that's when people were asking some of the hardest and most familiar questions. How afraid should we be? What do we owe strangers who live half a world away? When Roosevelt gave this speech, France had fallen to Germany, and Britain was worried it was next. Roosevelt made it clear that if Britain fell, America was in great danger. And to show that he was paying attention to his mail, he singled out a telegram he didn't like.
That telegram begged me not to tell again of the ease with which our American cities could be bombed by any hostile power which had gained bases in this Western Hemisphere. The gist of that telegram was, please don't frighten us by telling us the facts. Frankly and definitely, there is danger ahead. Danger against which we must prepare.
When the president finished a fireside chat, telegrams and letters would pour in by the thousands.
Telegram. The president. Why don't you order the FBI to act upon the information disclosed on the radio program Confidentially Yours and deport all aliens before they can commit sabotage and destroy our munitions plants and bring on a revolution? It can happen here. Henry Bunnell, New York, New York.
The president, aren't you lucky to have a real emergency? It presents the possibility of reemployment for the millions which your domestic policies have placed in the humiliating position of accepting government charity. You, who have deliberately created class feeling in this country, are hardly the one to sound the battle cry of unity. I.B. Woolley, Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Telegram. Let's appease Hitler. Give him England and France. Keep America out.
Take your own family and fortune and fight for your friend King George. We want no part of it.
In May 1941, the situation in Europe was so dire that President Roosevelt promised direct assistance to Britain, declared a national emergency, and told Americans they had to be united.
There are some timid ones among us who say that we must preserve peace at any price, lest we lose our liberties forever. To them I say this: never in the history of the world has a nation lost its democracy by a successful struggle to defend its democracy.
Dear sir, this is not a war for democracy, and you know it is not. England is fighting German imperialism in order to preserve British imperialism so that she can maintain her tyrannical rule over the oppressed peoples of her colonies. You blandly allow profiteers to reap a fortune from the suffering of the American people.
Dear Mr. President, all of my friends in the trades, railroad men, electricians, mechanics, shook their heads heartily and exclaimed, "The president, he told them, didn't he?" But what is the matter with the anemic clerks, bookkeepers, salesmen, adjusters? They don't seem to understand it all. They think only of their cozy little houses in the suburbs and their auto and their theater tickets. You haven't gotten to the so-called great middle class, sir. Mr. President, can't you blast them out of their false security soon?
Dear Mr. President, in your speech of last Tuesday night, you declared an unlimited emergency existed. Such a declaration calls for a united front. As a Negro woman, I am prepared to say to you that such a thing does not exist in this democratic United States. You are helping Hitler by your silent acquiescence to Jim Crowism. Respectfully yours, Mrs. Mildred C. Fredericks, New York, New York.
A few months later, the attack on Pearl Harbor united the country in a way the president could not. America threw itself into the war against Japan and Germany.
This war is a new kind of war. It is different from all other wars of the past, not only in its methods and weapons, but also in its geography. It is warfare in terms of every continent, every island, every sea, every air lane in the world.
Americans still wrote critical letters to the White House, but most people spoke of their support for the war, their loyalty to the president. One woman wrote, "Mr. Roosevelt, I love you as I do my father. You are history. You are America." Here's a final word from a woman in Chicago.
"Mr. President, the everyday man wants you to go ahead even faster than you are. Go ahead. Tax us. Tax our payrolls. Take bonds out of them. You won't hear any squawks. We hear the soreheads rave about capitalistic wars, about Jews, about the poor man gets the fighting, the rich man gets richer. They don't bother us. Don't let us down by not cracking down. We can take it. Try us and see."
A letter to President Roosevelt, written in 1942 by Dorothy Cameron Vowles. All the excerpts you heard in this story were read by actors. Hundreds of letters to President Roosevelt from 1933 to 1945 appear in the new book, The People and the President, America's Conversation with FDR.